meeting protocol first. An email invitation will be sent to you inviting you to join the Teams meeting. Click on the purple or blue Join Microsoft Teams meeting button and it will bring you into the meeting. Attendees in the chamber must switch off their delegate microphone when they are not speaking. Attendees in the chamber using their laptops to join the meeting virtually must ensure that they mute their laptop speakers and laptop microphone. Attendees at home must mute their laptop microphone when they are not speaking and should, where possible, use a headset, headphones or earphones. All attendees should pin the cameras of the chamber and the chair, if not physically in the chamber, in their Teams meeting by right-clicking on each and selecting pin. The meeting will be both audio and video recorded and members should remain mindful of this during all proceedings. Instant messaging facility should be used by members to indicate if they wish to speak on an item in the agenda. Members are reminded to only use the following in instant messenger. Q, if you wish to ask a question. P, if you wish to propose. S, if you wish to second. Please refrain from typing anything else into the instant messaging facility. The chairperson will invite members to speak in the order in which their message was received on the instant messenger conversation. At this stage, you unmute your microphone and speak or click the button on the delegate microphone if you are physically in the meeting room. It is important for ease of use that only the member invited to speak for the chairperson unmutes their microphone. Otherwise, the meeting becomes unmanageable. Members accessing the meeting remotely should ensure their camera is switched on when speaking. Following the presentation of the officer's report, the chairperson will call for a proposer or seconder. This should be done using the instant messenger. Please do not submit these until asked to do so, as it may be missed. If two members ask to propose, the first member having indicated through instant messenger will become the proposer and the second member having indicated will become the seconder. The chairperson will ask the proposer and seconder in turn to unmute to indicate vocally that they are proposing and seconding the decision. During a show of hands vote, members should indicate whether they are for, against or abstaining using the instant messenger. The totals will be tallied and the Democratic Services Manager will read them out for the purposes of the recording. During a recorded vote, the Democratic Services Manager will read the names of the committee members in alphabetical order. Members should respond for, against or abstain when their name is read out. Members accessing the meeting remotely should ensure their camera is switched on when voting. If you need to leave the meeting early, please indicate via the instant messenger feature so that we are aware this is an active decision and does not indicate connectivity problems. Members are reminded of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct. So that's your protocol under this new hybrid agenda. So we'll go to apologies. I had an apology from Councillor McKee. Was there any other apologies?
No, that's it, but everybody else is on the call.
Okay, and just a few remarks before we start. We'd like to offer our condolences to John Traynor on the recent death of his father, who was also called John. And we'd like to point out that this is actually Recycling Week, and there are a lot of messages up on social media, so if all councillors could share those to try and promote recycling throughout the district. Okay, we move on to number two, which is declarations of conflict of interest.
None, Chair.
Anyone? Nope. Okay, we move on to the action sheet, and we'll just take it page by page. So page one, page two, page three, page four, page five, page six, page seven, page eight, page nine. Can I get a proposer and a seconder for the action sheet and any matters arising?
So proposed, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Andrews. And thank you, Councillor Rowan. Okay. So we'll move on to item four. Item four is the DERA draft response on future recycling and separation of waste of a household nature in the north. And Roland is going to come in on that.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I have a short presentation for the members, Chair, if I share my screen now, and then there's a report to follow on after the presentation.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, Chair, I'm just going to check that you can see that and assume that the other members can see it as well, if you can see it.
Yeah, I can see it.
Okay, thank you. Chair, this is a presentation based on a public consultation document, which is essentially a precursor to a consultation that the Department, DERA, are launching in relation to the future of recycling and collection of waste within NI. So the content of the document itself, which is contained within the appendix of the subsequent report, but it's split into a number of sections. First, there's an exec summary. Section 1 sets out current position. Section 2 sets out the aims of the discussion. 3 and 4 is about the strategic context and policy. Section 5 really gets into the meat of it. Proposals 1 to 5 looks at the impacts on businesses. Section 6 is the proposals around households in there from 6 to 17. Section 7 details how to respond. It's worth highlighting the closure date for responses is the 4th of October, and I'm going to pick that up at the end of the presentation as well, Chair. There are 17 proposals in total. The first 5, as I mentioned earlier, highlighting green, those relate to businesses, and the remaining proposals all relate to households. I have highlighted which I believe, is my opinion, what are the key ones. So for businesses, that's proposals 1, 2 and 4. And for the household proposals, it's 6, 7 and 11. And I'll take you through each of these proposals in turn now. What I would say, Chair, is that the document which we have responded to has 49 questions. So where I am giving a statement of what our response has been is a generalisation.
Okay.
So proposal 1 is about business food waste. And the proposal from the department is that in order to increase food waste collected from non-household municipal waste, the regulations should be reviewed to ensure obligated businesses segregate food waste for collection. My proposed response for the committee's consideration is that we agree with this in general, as the aim is to increase food waste collected from non-household municipal waste. Chair, I would be proposing that we go through the full presentation and consider each of the proposals, unless any elected member wants to comment on any specific one.
Okay, I see Councillor Andrews has a question. Councillor Andrews, is that relating to...
What I will do is, Chair, I'll leave that to the end of the presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Proposal number 2 then, and again, this relates to businesses. So we want to increase recycling from businesses and other organisations that produce municipal waste. We think that the most effective way of doing this would be to require these establishments to segregate the recyclable waste from the residual waste so that it can be collected and recycled by waste collectors. And again, with this proposal, we generally agree with this. And what we're saying that it should have a positive impact on the business from an economic perspective, because it should be cheaper to recycle waste than to dispose of it. And it also should support the wider circular economy objectives. Proposal 3 is about rural needs. Again, as rural communities make up a significant proportion of Northern Ireland, we propose to review the impact on businesses in rural communities so they are not disproportionately affected by laws introduced to increase recycling of non-household municipal waste. So again, we agree with this, and the factors that should be considered include the costs of these services, the ability to reconfigure the services to alleviate the cost burden in rural areas. Point 4 is about maximising business recycling. We propose to review options to maximise business recycling whilst alleviating cost burden on business. Again, we agree with this, and we should be looking at a consistent approach of what services could be offered to other sectors. But what we did highlight is that it shouldn't result in additional costs for local authorities. Number five, in advance of implementing changes to business recycling, we will work with producers, collectors to improve the data capture and the performance of businesses and other organisations. And they are highlighting there that it will be subject to further consultation. So again, we're saying we would agree with this, but it would be useful if businesses were required to report maybe in a simpler way than what local authorities currently do. We then move on to the household proposals. Proposal 6 is arguably one of the most important, and that says, we propose that all councils in Northern Ireland should be required to restrict capacity for residual waste from households to help divert more material into the recycling waste streams. And they set out a number of potential options for councils to consider, such as increasing or decreasing the frequency, i.e. moving from twice collected a month to once every 3 weeks, or changing the capacity of the bins. What we have said in this response is that we generally agree and that it is in alignment with the waste hierarchy, i.e. that we should reduce our waste, but that the economic and the carbon emissions for each and all of the options that the department have highlighted need to be assessed in detail prior to considering what, if any, changes should be made. We also have stated that if this is something that the department wants to consider, we should consider how it could be done on a living council basis to get it, the best public acceptance, and also the maximise the behaviour change for reducing waste. Proposal 7, again, another critical proposal here. What they're saying is by 2023, we propose to legislate for councils to provide all curbside properties and flats with access to at least a weekly collection service of food waste. Officers' comments on this is we disagree. We think that the capacity and the systems are currently able to deal with this. We collect it fortnightly at the moment, and we do that in a commingled way with your garden waste. We are not convinced that moving to a weekly, or as it says there, at least a weekly, that could be more than once a week, would have the benefits that we need from an economic perspective, but also from a carbon perspective. So that is our proposed response. Number 8. Again, we propose that all councils in NI should be required to collect a core set of dry recyclable materials. We agree with this, provided that the councils have flexibility to determine optimal collection arrangements. Number 9, again, definition of core materials. We propose that these materials will be, and it's set out there, glass bottles, containers, paper and car, plastic bottles, plastic pots, tubs and trays, steel, aluminium, tins and cans. We agree. However, we need to ensure that economic and carbon analysis is undertaken where additional costs are anticipated, with central government needs to support local government financially. What I would say is we do collect those materials currently. Proposal 10, we're saying that this core set of materials should be regularly reviewed based on evidence, the markets and the finances of it. Again, we're saying we agree with this, but the review should include all stakeholders, producers, processors, central local government, and it should be ambitious to maximise any opportunities from the circular economy. Proposal 11, again, this is another significant proposal. And what they're saying here is we propose to review a separate collection of materials for Northern Ireland, supporting guidance to help clarify position on current and future collections to help councils and waste operators in decision making on separate collections. What that means is that you would collect your mixed dry recyclable waste, your blue bin waste, through a different system, i.e. a box system, at the curbside and source segregate it there, as opposed to co-mingled in a blue bin system. That would be a significant change for this organisation. So what we have said in this response is we're not sure. We think that a consistency would be welcomed across ANI. However, we need a detailed evaluation on this from an operational perspective, a financial, economic, a carbon perspective before any decision would be taken on this. And it should be based on specific Northern Ireland evidence. Number 12, local decision making. This is about providing national guidance to ensure or to help establish greater consistency in waste and recycling for households. Again, we generally agree with this. However, we have said that councils will need to have flexibility for their own local decisions. I suppose we're starting to stray into the guidance here as focusing on the what as opposed to how for local authorities, and that's something that we're picking up at the end in terms of our general comments. Communication, they're proposing they continue to support the Recycle Now, and again, we agree with that. But we highlight that as long as the financial support for councils also in regards to communication. Proposal 14, information transparency. We will work with councils to improve the transparency available to households of where the recycling is actually going. And again, we've said we agree, but it shouldn't produce a huge administrative burden on the stakeholders. Proposal 15 is the MRF, so that's your materials recovery facility or materials recycling facility reporting. We will introduce statutory regulation in line with the other UK nations requiring MRF to report input and output materials by weight to determine percentage of target and non-target. We agree with this, and if you're going to provide a positive response to 14, which is about the transparency, then this makes sense to officers. 16, performance indicators. So they propose to update the existing indicators to help monitor the efficiency and highlight where things could be improved. Again, we agree with this. They should be fit for purpose and they need to evolve and adapt as the environment changes. We also recommend that carbon should be considered as part of that. And proposal 17, which again tied in with 16, it says developing additional metrics. So this is metrics that will sit alongside weight-based, such as carbon. And we agree with this. We think a carbon metric should be included, and also the whole life carbon impact when we consider the impact of our waste and recycling. So, Chair, that is all of the discussion document which has been set out. A couple of points that we would highlight. This discussion has been set out in the absence of a strategy from the department. So that's something that we think we need to highlight. Officers also believe, and this would be a consistent view across officers within councils, that the department is starting to stray in to tell us how we collect waste as opposed to the outcomes that we should be trying to achieve. There are also certainly pointers in a particular direction when you think of the separate collection of some waste streams. We spoke about food, weekly for food, and the proposal they're putting around dry recyclables. And therefore, they're encouraging us down a specific system. And that would have an impact in terms of your existing infrastructure, your processors who currently provide this service. What we do see is that we believe that consistency will benefit all of the citizens within the 11 areas. However, we need to ensure that we have flexibility and noting that one size doesn't always fit all. So that is the key points that officers have highlighted. My final slide, Chair, is that we welcome feedback from members. If members wish to get feedback this evening, well, obviously we welcome that. Or if you wish to digest the information that has been circulated with the agenda, you could email it through to myself by the end of the month. Given the tight submission of the 4th of October, this report would not have been through full council. So I would submit the submission on behalf of the Council under the Schema Delegation, but taking on board all of the comments from elected members. And that is it, Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Roland. So we'll take a few questions. Councillor Andrews, you were in there first.
Thanks very much, Chair. And I've left my glasses at home, but hopefully I'll be able to read out what I've typed. From what we've seen, it's quite a beefy and substantial paper, consultation, if you could call it that. While the Department of the Environment has flagged up that this is a discussion document, I see that there are some proposals present, definitely in my opinion, underlining the fact that there's no smoke without fire. At this stage, I do agree and fully support the sentiments that we as a council need to put on record our feelings and thoughts on the matter and going through the paper and questions highlighting our train of thought. Central government, which I doubt, have to step up to the plate and put in place the financial support to make this happen. Finally, as a local council, we have gone the extra mile over the past few years in driving the message forward, the sterling work that has been done by our officers, the councillors, the strategic waste working group, and the successor, and ultimately the residents and businesses my concerns would be to flag up the consultation, the so-called consultation document, and it's going to change the system, the way we're doing things. You know, who's going to pick up the tab if we're going to change the way that we do things? You know, I think realistically it could cause confusion, and there'll be a lot of concerns amongst residents who have adapted to the excellent way that we're doing things today. So I fully support the sentiments that's been expressed by our officers tonight, and I'd be happy to propose at the end of that we do send a message outlining all our concerns to the department. And I'm sorry, I forgot my glasses, and I'm trying to read as best I can here from what I've typed, but I hope you understand where I'm coming from. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Andrews. I see Councillor Stokes has already proposed it, so we'll take you as a seconder. Councillor Clark, you were in there with a question.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And I agree. I support what the officer's saying. There's good clarity in the presentation, particularly in regards to the first four proposals. We do want to ensure that businesses are recycling as much as possible, and I think there's good scope to increase our targets in regards to that. In regards to the proposals for to collect the waste, the food and the dry recyclables, again, the onus will be on the council. There will be a greater financial burden on the ratepayer. If you start separating all the dry recyclables, we know the contract we went through to include glass, a commingled dry recyclables contract, to go down the road of, you know, single item recyclables would have serious cost consequences. And what is the gain? You know, what is the long-term gain out of that? The current MRF contract that is being operated clearly recycles the materials upon collection. So I don't see... You've also risked then further contamination in the box system also, because at times a lot of people don't have not got the educational information of what is even going into our blue recyclables. You know, there's still problems with that. So I just think if we're going down the route we're at present, I think we are taking the community with us, and particularly in the food waste. The community has really bought into what the council's trying to achieve to cause further confusion. I don't think it would be helpful, and I think the current system works well.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Clark. Roland, do you want to come in on any of those, or will I take the questions?
Well, Chair, I suppose the comments to date have been generally agreeing with what has been proposed, so unless there's any specific questions the members want clarification on.
Well, there's a couple more questions coming in here, so I'll carry on with those. Councillor Stokes, are you just happy to propose, or are you looking to add something?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just to endorse what many of the previous speakers have said, I think the council got this response pretty much exactly spot on. The points we agree with are obvious ones. Well, he's already talked about, the business aspect, but in going to, who dreamt this? Going to a weekly food, specifically food. I mean, I know in my own house, even with all the best recycling, how much food waste you actually have, and the cost of the council and the extra, in terms of whatever vehicles we're going to need, and the cost against the benefit, I don't think it would add up. We do need to say the staff and extra vehicles, and given the pain we went through to get to a co-mingled, and we've come a long way on this, and I think you'd be starting all over again, and the cost implications would be for minimal benefit. Sure, thank you. I'm happy to propose. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Councillor Stokes. Councillor McKevitt, you're in there next.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ona. A few points. I agree. Willie has come up with some of my thoughts there on the food waste and having the changes on that and the recyclables. But I do like the idea of some of the replies where Roland, you stated that the level council model would be a great idea, and I do agree with that. One, the main one that would stick out for me would be the education and the one message coming from all the level councils. On how to recycle and the education around that for everybody, that one message would be easier read and no confusion. So something like that would go down well, but not at the expense of the great work that has been done. In my opinion, our council have taken the lead long ago on recycling, particularly with our blue bins, and I definitely wouldn't be supportive of the box system. I think it would be a disaster for this area when we have worked so hard to bring blue bins to everybody's home and the glass, etc., and keeping that into that. I think people have bought into that big time, and the same with our food waste. So, I don't think there would be any shame in adding in there about the great work that we have done, and let this council take the lead on our blue bin waste and our food. I think we should come in with a stronger response than that, and let others follow us, because I think we've just done, the officers and that have done great work on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor McKevitt. Councillor O'Reilly.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I would have similar views to the previous speakers. One of my main concerns would be the vast increase in the carbon footprint, because those bin lorries are doing 4 or 5 miles to the gallon, and I just can't see how the ecology of it would add up, and how it would benefit the environment. Because, as the other speakers have said, our council residents really seem to have taken on board the council's recycling policy, and they're doing a good job for us. So I wouldn't want to rock that boat too much. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor O'Reilly. Okay, so we're happy to move on to item 5. We had a proposer there from Councillor Stokes and seconded by Councillor Andrews on item 4. So we move on to item 5.
Sorry, Chair, it was the other way around. It was proposed by Councillor Andrews and seconded by Councillor Stokes.
Are you sure, sir? I thought Councillor...
Yeah, because Councillor Andrews had come in first with his question, and he...
Oh, right, okay. I thought when they typed it into Messenger first that was it.
Yeah, I suppose it's them. Yeah.
We're happy here, Richard.
No, whatever. No problem. Okay, we move on to item 5, which is Neighbourhood Services Directorate Midterm Assessment Emergency Business Plan from April to September 2020. Roland, are you coming in on that?
Yes, Chair, thank you. So this would have been the emergency business plan that would have been presented previously. So it's an update of where we are at the moment, Chair. So I'm looking for proposal and second, and happy to take any questions.
Yeah. So we have a proposal there with Councillor Andrews. Can I get a seconder for item 5, please? Thank you, Councillor Owen. So if we've no other questions, we move on to item 6. OK, you. So item six is the Memorandum of Understanding partnering arrangements for the removal of snow and ice from town centre footways and pedestrian areas. And this is one for Kevin Scullion.
Thanks, Chair. The report is for decision. Last year, some of the committee members may remember that we did sign up to a Memorandum of Understanding with DFI, which set in place an agreement with us that under extreme weather conditions, snow, heavy ice, that we would assist DFI for designated town centre footpaths, subject to the council having resources available at that particular time. Neither DFI or indeed the council have a legal duty to undertake these works, but both organisations recognise the importance of this being done in extreme weather conditions from a public safety perspective. The report, Chair, as presented, is seeking to renew and extend this agreement. The last time this was discussed in committee, councillors requested that we seek an extension to some of the locations that were included within the agreement. So that was a request to include Cross Mid Lane, Camla, Hilltown and Castle Welland, which weren't included in last year's agreement. DFI have agreed to that. The draft agreement is presented at Appendix 1 to the report. The memorandum is proposed would commence beginning the 1st of October and would remain in force for a period of 3 years with the possibility of extending it for a further year. Both parties would have the right to withdraw from the agreement given 6 months' notice. I suppose the best way to try to describe it is that if we sign up to this memorandum, then there's a piece of work to be done between DFI officials and council officials about how the system will actually work, what will actually trigger the memorandum or the work under the memorandum. And those agreements will be reached locally, so each council will reach it locally with its own DFI road service section. So, Chair, if agreeable, we would ask that the council would sign up to the Memorandum of Understanding and that officers then would work with DFI officials to put a bit more meat on the bone in relation to how this will work.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. We've a few questions in there first, so we'll take those. Councillor Riley, you were first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is Kilkeel not along? I can't see the list. Are they on the schedule for work to be done if we sign up to this memorandum of understanding? The other thing is too, Kevin, I've had in the past community groups and sports clubs and that type of thing offering their services, but we just hadn't the equipment or whatever to facilitate them, and you know, if we could bring those people on board, it would be a big asset.
Sure. In relation to just looking through it here, Kilkeel is on the list. Bridge Street, Kilkeel, Greencastle Street, Kilkeel, Newry Street, Kilkeel, Newcastle Street, Kilkeel, and along is doesn't appear to be on the list that I can see. In relation to bringing other groups on, it's something we can look at, Chair. I expect that there will be insurance issues that would have to be considered. The lead partner in relation to this would be DFI, and it would be DFI who would lead any sort of moves towards that type of arrangement. But it's something that we can speak to the local DFI officials when we begin to talk about this.
Madam Chair, I would be very concerned if Annalong wasn't included. It's one of our major villages, and in round the post office, primary school, that area of Annalong is extremely busy, and it wouldn't take a lot of additional resources to include it on the schedule. But I think a lot of people would ask questions if it wasn't on. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Riley. Councillor Tinley, I'm going to take members of the committee first, so I'll allow you in at the end, if that's okay. Next was Councillor Stokes, you were going to propose it. Are you anything to add to that?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I think this goes back, Chair, to having proposed the big freeze of 2010. I think this one, we sort of found ourselves nobody knew what anybody had responsibility. I think that's when negotiations started. But hopefully we won't need a chair. We have enough to do. But, you know, if we do that, we've some kind of arrangements in place for, you know, our major thoroughfares, that people aren't left as they were 10 years ago, to slip and slide and whatever else, Chair. So happy to propose to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Stokes. Councillor Clark, have you a question?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I suppose every village can't be on the list. You'd never get the staff to deliver on the project. I think the point that Councillor Riley makes is a good one. If the voluntary sector is able to cooperate to maybe help in them locations, then surely that must be taken on into consideration. And I'm thinking of, you know, there's large housing estates, you know, and I'm thinking of, you know, a long period of really cold weather where the estates are like an ice rink, and people, particularly the vulnerable, can't get out, you know, even to get up the street. You know, they can't even get their cars out, you know. So if there's an opportunity for community groups, sporting groups, and residence groups, you know, to have the opportunity to even avail of grit, if there was a supply of grit made available in these areas, then the local voluntary sector could maybe deliver on some of the other villages and large housing estates. So I propose we make a request to DFI Roads to see if that's a possibility.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Clark. Councillor Andrews.
Thanks so much, Chair, and I would second Councillor Clark's proposal regarding the grit and the salt mill, because I think the supply of that's very important. But before I do second report, I would like to highlight the likes of Sinfield and Crossgar in my own area of Rowallan that have been not included on the list. And if at all possible, I would like those to be put forward along with Ballinahinch and Killalea. But as I say, it is important that we do have a joint up approach with Road Service and as a council to deal with this issue. And also, we've seen in action over this past several months, community groups who have gone the extra mile in working with us in relation to dealing with COVID in our communities. But thanks very much.
Thank you. Councillor McKevitt.
Yeah, thanks very much. I would like to see Restrever been added on to that. And I'm not going to start giving a list of places where it's going to tie up on the materials and the actual job getting done. But because Restrever is in such close proximity, where it's just two main streets, where a lot of businesses are there that people will need essential supplies from, and it can be hilly, it's something similar to Hilltown, you know what I mean? So I would like, and I propose that Restrever be added onto to the list as well. And again, I would agree with Terry and Willie Clark that the volunteer sector, you know, even if it's to try and deliver the service onto our main village streets first and as a priority, and then after that, getting the supplies to the like of developments that are in hilly areas to try and give people safely to work or to school or whatever it may be. So I propose that. Thank you.
Seconded.
Thank you, Councillor McGivitt. Councillor Owen, I have next.
Hi, thanks very much, Chair. Just wondering if somebody would be able to explain to me what the difference is between Priority 1 and Priority 2. Just noticing here that Ballinahinch is mentioned twice, so there's a Priority 1 and a Priority 2, yet Saintfield and Crossgar aren't mentioned at all. With the demographics of our age population, you know, we would have quite an age population that would rely very heavily on local towns and wouldn't be able to be getting their shopping in from Tesco's and things like that. So really, just for the sake of Saintfield and Crossgar, I'm sort of just wondering what the difference is there between Priority 1 and Priority 2, if somebody could explain that. And apologies if it's gone over before. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Councillor Owen. Kevin, do you want to respond to any of those, or will I take Councillor Tinley?
I'm happy to wait for Councillor Tinley.
That's grand. Councillor Tinley?
Thanks, Chair. Kevin, I hope it's worth waiting for. I don't mean to disappoint. Chair, listen, thanks for letting me in. Most of the questions I had have pretty much been covered there by Councillor Clark in his proposal. I would agree with Councillor Riley in the sense that the memorandum of understanding, the original one, was obviously for the bigger centres of population, and that was understandable. It's down to a resource issue. But whenever we start to add to that list, Chair, gaps then start to appear, as all our members have rightly pointed out here, and that causes problems for the councillors, particularly in that area. So I'm very grateful to Councillor McKevitt for requesting that there's ever be added to that, and I am not a member here, but if I could ask someone to possibly consider Muir Bridge as well, Chair, because the chapel and the school are at the top of the hill. And thanks for letting me in, Chair. And just Councillor Clark, I mentioned about the salt bins. I mean, the old salt bins, I think the most of our communities are quite active and would be quite willing and able to disperse and distribute the salt themselves if it is provided. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Denley. So, Kevin, do you want to respond to some of those?
Some great ideas there, particularly in terms of relation to the community groups and the leaving out the salting bins in different areas. And I suppose those are sorts of things that we can try to seek to agree with the officials of DFI, that we plan ahead so that when these events occur, if they do occur, that we're not just limited to council staff and DFI staff trying to deal with this issue. But, Chair, we'll undertake to raise that as part of the discussions with DFI to see how that can be worked through. A lot of requests to extend the schedule there for other towns and places. I think as Councillor Clark pointed out, there's a resource issue, and that's something that would have to be considered. DFI are the lead partners, and if there was an agreement to extend it to other towns and villages, then it would have to be through agreement with them. But that's something that we as officers can raise with them when we begin our discussions to get more detail on this. In relation to the priority one, priority two, I'll undertake to come back to the councillor. I would assume, and it is just an assumption, that priority one would be the places that they were in the event of limited resources, that a priority will be given to priority one and then priority two locations after that. But that's just my interpretation of it. I don't see anything within the memorandum which clarifies that, but I will seek clarification from DFI, who have written the memorandum, and come back to the councillor to confirm that.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. So on item six, I have it down here, proposed by Councillor Stokes and seconded by Councillor Andrews. There, is that okay? Yeah.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, we'll move on to item seven, which is the report on request to extend council Christmas displays.
Sure, I'm taking that again. Yeah. So it is for decision. There was discussion at our last Neighbourhood Service Committee back in August, and there were a number of requests for us to extend the council's Christmas display for 2020 and beyond. There were three specific requests, and those are outlined within the report. The first one was providing Christmas illuminations adjacent to the Ross Monument site in Ross River, extending the festoon lighting at Newcastle Harbour to the end of the pier, and lighting up an oak tree along North Promenade in Newcastle. The report provides an estimate of the cost for the new products that will be involved in doing that, the installation costs in this year, and then recurring costs in future years. And there's a table within the report that kind of tries to summarise that. Appendix 1 gives a bit more detail, shows some photographs of where these locations are. So in terms of Ross's Monument, the total for year one to do that would be $2,630. What we're talking about there is directly across from Ross's Monument, there's a lay-by, and there's about four lampposts that we can see in close proximity to that. Ross's Monument is at a bend in the road, so the lay-by is across the road from Ross's Monument, and the lampposts are on the opposite side of the road. So the proposal here is to put four pole-mounted illuminations, which you would see coming into and going out of that particular corner. Newcastle Harbour, it's the cheaper of the options. We already put festoon lighting along the pier itself. It's just that last 20 metres or so that we don't have the festoon lighting. The issue there is that we would have to hang that festoon lighting on the navigational aid that is on the end of that harbour. Now, clearly, the navigational aid is an important safety feature for mariners in the area. We've raised it with the Commissioner of Lights, who would be the experts in terms of navigational aids and indeed who you would need to get permission from where you're going to potentially interfere with something like that. We're waiting for their decision on that or their opinion on whether this would be a good idea or not. The third one is lighting up an oak tree along North Promenade, and the appendix shows you a photograph of that. This is a more expensive one because of a range of reasons, the lights that have to be bought, and the fact that there's no available power source close by, so there's work involved in getting power to that particular tree, and the cost we're talking about there in year one would be $6,150. Sure, it's the officer's recommendation that we would proceed with Ross's Monument. We can see that it would have a positive visual impact. We would recommend proceeding with extending the festoon lighting along the harbour, the pier, provided the Commissioner of Lights is in agreement. But we feel that it would be a step too far to proceed in terms of the oak tree at the North Promenade, given the significant costs there. And it would be our proposal that we would not proceed with that particular request, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. We have a couple of questions in there. Councillor Taylor, you were first.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. At the last meeting, Kevin, there had been a discussion regarding Newton Hamilton, which I don't see mentioned in this report. Could I ask us where things are with that? Now, I understand, obviously, there's working on in Newton Hamilton regarding the EI scheme, and a lot of the potential for anything to happen would be, relating to that been completed, but has there been any discussion with Newton Hamilton following on from last month's meeting?
Sure. At the last month's meeting, I think it was, I told the committee that prior to the meeting, we had emailed correspondence with Newton Hamilton Community Association. The actual completion of the EI scheme is not running as initially planned. I think initially it was the community association were hoping that the scheme would be complete before Christmas this year. It'll be into the new year before it's completed, and therefore, they recognise that to do such a scheme would be timely whenever the scheme is complete. So it's still our intention to look at that, Chair, and we would bring back a proposal in the new year once the scheme's in, when we know better on the ground what we have and what it is that we can provide. And we've advised the community association of that intention. And my understanding is that they're content with that. But if the councillor has other information in that regard, happy to listen to that and to take it on board.
No, Chair. I'm content with that. I understand, obviously, they've been involved even in some with the TIA scheme in terms of working with residents on that. And I understand, obviously, there is a bit of a delay. And whilst the work is started, it will take longer than maybe expected. But it's just, I want to make sure it hadn't been completely written off. I know it won't happen for this year. I just wanted to make sure that it was still on the agenda down the line whenever the facilities are in place for that to happen in Newton Hamilton. So it's just a matter of keeping it on record. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Taylor. Councillor Stokes?
Yeah, just really a comment, Chair. Given the announcements over the last 48 hours, people are actually asking themselves, really, will families be able to meet up for Christmas? I know it's a question my own father asked me there last week, and I did no answer for him. And it could be a pretty bleak midwinter in front of us. So there may not be a whole lot of us to cheer about other than our decorations. So just, and Christ, Kevin and all the staff and everybody involved this year, just to make a special effort to make sure it's as good as it can be. There may not be a whole lot else to cheer about, and it'll certainly, I would think, hopefully bring some benefit to our citizens out there, given the sort of Christmas we might be having this year. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Stokes. Councillor Clark?
Thanks, Chair. I suppose to say at the offset, I'm disappointed at the cost in regards to, they're so high to get the power to the oak tree. But I agree with the recommendation that it's not value for money. But maybe for this year, is it possible maybe look at a small cut tree beside the power source at the toilet, which would have no cost implications really, except for, say, a 10 or 12 foot tree. at least for this year, and then maybe the Newcastle Harbour community could make a bid in regards to the sustainable Christmas tree programme in the future. Might be a way, to satisfy the needs of that local business community there who feel they get nothing from the council in regards to Christmas. There's no Christmas cheer, no lights. There's not very little, and they don't feel a part of Newcastle. So if it's possible to meet us halfway in regards to, having that cut tree with a small amount of lights, I think that might be more cost effective.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Clark. Kevin, do you want to come back on that? Or?
Sure, something that we can look at. But I suppose a lot of towns and villages could make the same argument, and if we do it at all, we wouldn't want to do it half faced. Therefore, in order to do it successfully, it will, as Councillor Stokes says, there's no, if we're going to do it, we need to do it right. So, I can come back to the committee next month with an idea of what we could do and the cost that would involve, and allow the committee to make a decision on that basis.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. Are you happy enough with that, Councillor Clark?
That's okay, Chair. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Okay, could I possibly get a proposer and a seconder for item 7 there, please? Councillor Owen, could you just talk into the mic just for the recording?
Happy to propose, thank you.
Thank you. And Councillor Stokes, can you do the same for second, please?
I'll do a second, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we move on to item 8. Item 8 is just going to be an updated report on the Shimna River Wall, and I think Kevin is going to take that.
Yes, Chair. We had hoped to bring a business case in terms of the repairs required to this wall, but we're still in negotiations with the Rivers Agency. It will be something we would anticipate bringing to you for the next month's meeting. It was previously reported to the committee back in June and August in 2019 about the damage to the Shimna River wall at the Central Promenade, Newcastle, just before it enters into the sea. And on one side of the river, the wall there a large crack has appeared for about a 15-metre length of the wall. What's happened is the wall itself has moved outwards due to the pressure of the retained bank behind it. And that can be seen, our structural engineers indicated that it's a movement of between 10 and 15 centimetres at the base and 30 centimetres at the top of the wall. At that initial time, we established that maintenance of the wall was council responsibility, and that any works that was to be carried out would require the consent and approval from Rivers Agency under what they refer to as a Schedule 6 application for consent to undertake works to a watercourse. Consultation has been ongoing. We thought we had an answer early on, and the answer would have been to place stone armouring into the river to provide support and then allow us to pull the wall back. The cost of that was estimated somewhere just under 30 grand. Rivers Agency, when we put that to them, they were concerned that would reduce the width of the river at that location. Now, I think the argument we have put to them is that it's just at that point below the weir that it's about to open up into the sea, and it's, we could see an argument like that further up the river, but just at that point there, I think it's less important. But anyway, we've worked with Rivers Agency. We have an alternative solution we've put to them, but it involves taking the existing wall down and building a new one, and that will more than double the cost of the project. So, Chair, discussions are continuing with the Rivers Agency to reach an agreement, and once that's reached, which we hope to reach within the next week or two, we'll bring back a report to the meeting in October as to what is proposed, and we may need to bring that back in committee as it may involve the providing with a business case for approval to comply with procurement regulations. Chair, that's just for noting. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Kevin, for that update. I don't see any questions in the instant messenger, so if people are happy enough, we'll move on to item 9.
Chair, I'm taking that as well. It's the recovery of a report on the recovery of the public conveniences, and it's for decision by the committee. The committee will be aware that we have got 31 public conveniences, and they were all closed at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. 16 were reopened in June, and I've provided a list of those that are currently open at Appendix 1 of the report. There was enhanced daily cleaning service for the reopening of the PCs. They were specifically selected due to having a high footfall and being in tourist areas, and those facilities were logistics and operations allowed for cleansing in a better way. We're now proposing to extend the number by a further 6, and those would include the public convenience at Loch Ross, Hilltown, Dundrum, Castlewellan, Ardglass and Loch Inch Cemetery. It is proposed also at this time of year, as we move into the autumn stroke winter, there are a number of facilities that we would usually close, and those would be Cranfield's, Spelga at Spelga Dam, Ballyhornan and the Coyle in Downpatrick. We're proposing this year not to close those, but to continue having those toilets open. With the current resource facilities that we have within the directorate, we weren't able to recruit additional staff to clean the toilets. The staff that we had, some of them were off for COVID reasons, and others were being deployed to other areas. So during the summertime, we had to employ a private contractor to assist us with the cleaning of the toilets, mainly focused in around the Newcastle area and Bloody Bridge. In order for us to continue with this and to open these further 6 public toilets, we will need to continue with some sort of level of contractor-led cleaning of the toilets. So it's proposed to continue with a contractor cleaning the toilets in Newcastle, Bloody Bridge and a couple of other ones. These additional costs that we have for employing the contractor will be offset by, as I said, we weren't able to recruit seasonal staff, so there is that money within the budget. But that money within the budget will run out at the end of September. So if we do proceed with this, there will be an extra £10,000 cost per month as long as we continue to do this. And that will be an additional cost to the current budget that we have. We still believe that we should proceed with this. Obviously, we will be monitoring what's happening in terms of restrictions for COVID-19. Things may make us change our view on this as we move forward, but that is the proposal that we would have at the moment. The remaining ones after that, which are to open, are the public toilet based in Annalong, Bessbrook, Ross Trevor, Struel, Island Park in Newcastle, Saintfield, Killyleagh, Crossgar and Ballinahinchinshire.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Councillor Andrews is in there with a proposal. Do you want to add to that, Councillor Andrews?
Just more or less, with the mention of Crossgar and all, the officer has answered my question before he even asked it, so I'm only too happy to propose that we'll go ahead. I know at the moment the situation is uncertain, but happy to proceed. We're happy to propose we do go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Andrews. Councillor McKevitt, you're in there with a question.
Yeah, thanks, Ona. With the track and trace to work successfully, our local businesses, particularly around the Warren Point area, are finding it very difficult, where people who are out walking or tourists in the area are coming in and trying to use their facilities, and it's getting very hard to refuse families, particularly with young children, not to use the toilet. But they had to pay and have to pay cleaners to come in as well as part of their restrictions and under government guidelines have to be done. Is there a possibility that we could increase the opening hours, particularly around tourist areas like Warren Point and maybe Newcastle, off at least one of our public conveniences, to at least be able to direct some that are out walking? And like, it doesn't have to be summer months for people to be out. They'll be out all year round. I would appreciate and propose that tonight, that we could look in, at least let the officers look into the possibility of increasing opening times of at least one facility in the main areas there to help with the track and trace for local businesses. It's my understanding that Boris Johnson Arling and Michelle, the First Deputy First Minister, are addressing at 8 o'clock, so things might be changing rapidly, so we'll take that on board as well with that proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor McKevitt. I see Councillor Curran has his hand up there. I'm not sure if it's a mistake or he wants to ask a question.
Yes, Madam Chair. Just to ask a very quick question. Well, I support the opening of these facilities to get there. My question is, the cleaning of these facilities is very important because, as you know, this virus is about everywhere like that. It could be easily passed on. And I see, as we already heard from the officer there about the additional cost factor here, how often are these toilets cleaned per day? Can I ask that question?
Yep.
Sure, they're currently cleaned 3 times per day. As we move forward and we extend the number of facilities that we're going to open, we have to review that, and the frequency may be reduced down to 2, but we do that only having cognizance to the current public health advice we have in relation to that. The big focus for us is when they are cleaned properly, and there's a particular focus is given to touch points. But you know, with the high footfall on some of our toilets, you know, we can only do what we can do. You know, there's quite a number of people can use the facility from one clean to the next, but that applies everywhere. Applies within this building here too. We have increased the frequency of cleaning of our toilets within this building. We've heard from the councillor and McKevitt about the business premises in one point having to increase their frequency, but there's no guarantee that after the facility has been cleaned that someone goes into it next who is a carrier and passes the COVID-19 virus at that stage. As organisations, we have to take cognizance of the public health advice, and that's what we're doing. And when we make these steps forward to continue to open the facilities, which are much in demand, we do take account of public health advice.
Well, I thank you very much, but there is a concern out there about the virus at the present time, and I know you're applying by the rules like that there, but and you know, people sometimes abuse the public toilets, so they do. So I just wanted to know that, all right, they've cleaned them 3 times, is that morning and noon and the evening time sometimes, or what's the sequence here of cleaning?
It really depends on the location of the toilets, and the staff that are involved in it are working on it full time. So they go through their particular, they have a set number of toilets to clean each day, and once they've gone round them the first time, then they start going round them the for the second time. Now at the moment we're able to achieve that on a 3 times a day frequency. We're reviewing that as we move forward. The other aspect that we've done at all our public toilets is that outside the public toilets, we've placed a sanitization station. And I suppose that is for me personally, that would be the big protection for people. So they use the sanitization station when they're going into the toilet, and they use it when they're coming out. And then it's all about everyone taking care of themselves. And through using those sanitization stations, it's a way that we help them to do that. Within the facilities as well, we ensure that there's hot water available, soap and towels, or paper towels, so that they can dry their hands. But once they come out after washing their hands, they can still use the station again to sanitize their hands with an alcohol-based sanitizer.
Sure, thank you very much. That's very good information to have and to pass on. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so if everyone's happy enough, that item 9 was proposed by Councillor Andrews. I don't think I have a seconder there yet.
Well, I would second it, Madam Chair, if you want me to second it.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Curran. Okay, we'll move on to item 10. Public strategy, the 12-week public consultation. I think that's Kevin again for noting.
It's for noting, Chair. So in February this year, this committee and subsequently the full council endorsed the draft public toilet strategy. And the strategy had a number of recommendations, and they're laid out within the consultation document we're proposing, and also within the report. And the committee and within the strategies as well, it was recognised the need for us to consult with the public in relation to the strategy itself before we would bring the strategy back to the committee for a final approval. And that final approval will take on board the consultation responses we get from the public consultation. So, Chair, for information purposes, we have provided a copy of the online survey that is proposed to place out for a 12-week period. Within the strategy, it's quite simple to complete. The participants are asked to state whether they... We set out each of the recommendations within the report, and we ask them to indicate whether they strongly agree, neither agree or disagree, or strongly disagree. And there's also a section when they can make their own comments in terms of what their own feelings in terms of the public convenience provision within the council area. As I say, the findings of the consultation we brought back to yourselves within this committee for review. And what we would hope to do then is to finalise the strategy and publish that. I think when we talked about the strategy, it was recognised that, you know, the strategy is one thing, but there will be a range of work packages which will fall out of the strategy itself. And each of those work packages will involve probably quite detailed business cases to be brought back to this committee for review, covering a range of issues from how we clean our toilets, how we maintain our toilets, which toilets should remain, what additional toilets may be necessary. And it's through that process, Chair, that the council can come to a final conclusion about the shape and size and nature of the public convenience service it provides in the future.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. We've just a couple of questions in there. Councillor Mason, you were first.
Thanks very much, Chair. Yeah, it's just briefly just say that I really welcome that this is going out to a public consultation. I'm just noting on the recommendation that it includes, you know, that people with autism and dementia are included and things like that. I'm just asking if moving forward with the strategy, if some consideration can be given to these toilets, you know, providing literature on domestic violence. And the fact that I'm just thinking back to Councillor Howell's motion on the domestic violence and how the council facilities and that will be deemed as safe places. So it's just basically if I can ask if some consideration is given to that moving forward.
Thanks, Kevin. Kevin, do you want to take all the questions or do you want to answer Cathy there?
Well, I'm happy to answer that. I mean, I suppose, you know, it is a public consultation. So, you know, if responses of that nature are fed back through the public consultation, then that's something certainly that will be brought back to this committee for some sort of consideration. Roland,
Chair, maybe if I could come in there, that is probably a decision that the council could take outside of the strategy, if they so choose to do so.
Okay, thank you. We have a question in there from Pastor Andrews.
Thanks very much, Chair, and I do welcome the paper and its contents and fully supportive of its aims and aspirations. And I do believe that we need to invest and improve and bring up to date and standard the facilities that are currently in place. And I do strongly encourage the members of the public to take part in the consultation, because it is very important that as a council we need to know your views and people's views and opinions and to enable us to progress further. So I'm happy enough to support the paper in principle. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Andrews. Councillor Clark.
Thanks, Chair. No, I'd like to put in record the amount of work that's went into this. Both the strategy and now we're getting ready for the consultation. It's been a long, long process in regards to even to get this stage. And I suppose from my point of view, it's, you know, how long is this going to take after the consultation? I'm hearing now that there's going to be detailed business cases. I know there's the toilet, we had taken a decision outside the consultation that we'd move ahead with the Castle Park toilet in Newcastle. And Killock. And Killock is progressing through a different scheme, I think, or process. should we not be developing the business case now for Castle Park to move on, because this committee did take that decision?
Chair, officers are working on the business case for Castle Park, so I would hope that we would bring in the business case back within the next number of committees of this committee. I suppose there's a range of options that we have to consider, and I do appreciate the points the councillor makes that it's been a long process. This has been going on for 3-4 years, but you know, it's not a straightforward service, and you know, I think what we want to end up with at the end of the day is an excellent product, and what can happen is that we can run steadfast into spending capital money on new facilities, but haven't taken on board the other things about how we're going to maintain them and clean them, which is what we've spoken about tonight. And therefore, it's about getting a balance which this council can afford in terms of providing facilities which are up to standard, but facilities with which it is able to maintain at a high level going forward. And it's trying to get that balance. I think at the moment we don't have that balance. We don't have that balance, and it will take, I fully expect it will take a number of years before you're able to reach that balance.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. You happy enough with that response, Councillor Clark, yet?
Yes, thanks, sir.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll move on. Items 11 to 17 are all for noting, so we'll take a proposer and a seconder for all of those at the end. So we'll start with item 11, which is the annual cost of district cleansing and enforcement, and Joe Parks is coming in on that.
Yes, Chair, thank you. Basically, this here, as you have said, is for noting, and this is following a request by the committee last month to receive information on the annual cost of district cleansing and enforcement. First of all, if you look at the annual costs there, we're looking at the 1920 end of things, and really the district cleansing budget was something like 2.2 million, but the actual spend had actually been 1.9, and that was really down to, you find that if there's a problem in refuge, those staff are moved across and coded to refuge, so you tend to find that cleansing can actually have a lower spend, while refuge is a higher spend. And then looking at the enforcement side of things, we have about 211k budget, but we only spent 118k, and that was really down to where we've had terrible problems trying to get this here resourced with enforcement officers, etc. So that's why there's a drop. If we then look at the district cleansing, the figures presented form part of the council's annual submission of performance information to APSE as part of the statutory duty of improvement. The 15-17 figures, 2.3 million, and the 17-18 figures, 2.4 million. There's only about a 3% increase in that, and that's just really down to inflation. However, you will notice that there is a jump up to an 18-19 by about 400k. And what that actually was, we didn't have additional spend. It was more to do with how we report the APSEs. That's where we started to report our figures as per the APSE parameters. So that explains that piece. Again, if you're looking at the gross cost of service per household, again, they have went up, and the main jump is in 18-19. And again, that was down to the whole how we report on APSE. In addition, Chair, we have also, as you know, last month brought a paper talk about keeping ordinary and beautiful in our neighbourhoods exercise, so that was done. Now, the other thing that we had been asked to do was to provide some benchmarking information. We have been in contact with the other councils within Northern Ireland, and unfortunately at this moment in time, that information isn't complete, and we intend to provide the committee a report on that next one. Then if we move on to the enforcement side of things, again, the table itself, you can see over the number of years it's actually dropped. And again, that was really down to getting resources in. And I'm glad to say that hopefully the next month we will have another two permanent enforcement officers in place, which should help things. And then finally, I would just say about first penalty notices. Again, they tend to jump out a little bit. 73 issued, 17-18, and then 18-19 was 59, 19-20 was 84. But I'm fairly confident that for this financial year, we will see an increase on fixed penalties with those additional staff in place. So if there's any questions, Chair, I'm going to take them.
Thank you for that, Joe. Yeah, we have a few questions. Councillor Casey, you're first there.
Thank you very much, Chair. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Joe sort of answered one of my questions. I was just looking at the overall costs of enforcement service and the way it's been reducing over the last couple of years, but that's obviously because reducing numbers of staff and that. And the costs are actually, the costs we see in front of us are for servicing those different enforcement issues with upper right, littering, fly tipping and dog fouling. And any return, if we were doing our job right, I think any return on that, lots of more convictions on each of those categories might mitigate against some of the charges. Would that be right, Joe?
Yeah, through the chair, yes, that would be correct. Thursday, we do have an enforcement plan, and through that, we will hopefully start to improve on the fixed penalty notice. The other thing, too, is that we are, as part of the benchmarking, there's a number of councils out there, especially ours in North Down, that has quite a significant amount of fixed penalties issued. And we are certainly tending with them to see how they went about that. The only thing we'd say on that is they do tend to use more staff, which automatically means there's more costs. But I think there are lessons to be learned.
No, that's fine. Thanks very much for that, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next in there was Councillor Andrews.
Thanks very much, Chair. And I'd like to thank Joe for the report and everything. And no, a few points here, but what I'll do is I'll commit them to the officers, you know, because I think at the moment it probably mightn't be relevant. Some of the points I wanted to raise isn't relevant, but in another area it is. But thanks very much. Just I commend the report and the efforts of all concerned, and also welcome the additional staff, and hopefully we can get more additional staff recruited and particularly to street claims and to enforcement. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Riley.
Thanks, Madam Chair. My question, Joe, is how are resources distributed throughout the district? People will often say to me that Newcastle and Warren Point, for example, the bins always seem to be emptied very promptly and you don't get a lot of waste accumulating around the bins. But if you look at Kilkeel and Annalone, it's a continual series of complaints about bins not being emptied and an accumulation of rubbish along the Mourne Esplanade in Kilkeel, the town centre, the marine park and on along. I was just wondering, how do you actually manage that and ensure that there's an equal distribution of resources throughout the area? Because it's very important that people feel they're getting treated fairly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just to reply, I'm not sure. What you do tend to find is at places like Newcastle and Warren Point, we do bring in additional staff. And for the tourism end of things, I do realise that we have about 100 miles of coastal area, which we also need to cover. I would say at the moment, we do have a number of systems in place, and certainly going forward, management want to try and standardise that, ensure that a fair and equal service is provided right across the district. So we will be looking at that.
Okay, thank you. If we're happy enough, we move on to item 12.
I was just going to go on to item 12 there.
Right. Go on ahead, Joe, yeah.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Again, this here one's about the household recycling centres and basically giving an update on the reopening plans to date. And I can see us with COVID maybe over the next couple of months actually having to do a committee report just to keep members up to date on what's happening. This report is for noting, and the purpose of the report is to provide further updates to the committee on the household recycling centres. Last month we put together stuff to say that what we were doing to the August committee, and I'm glad to report that we have actually carried it out. In addition to that, we have also reopened time site, which is on a Thursday and a Friday, which is from 10 to 4. But again, we do have to close for lunch for that. So I know from last month, listening to the members, they had concern about hill time. So I'm glad to say that we have that open as well. Utenham was another one that had been closed and we got it open. Really, for me, the next phase is really in two parts. And the first one is really the most important, is really getting the actual recycling sites open on a Saturday, which might be on reduced hours, but from 10 to 4. And then from that, to see how we can expand that again. I would remind members that once we move into October, we go into the winter hours. However, for the Saturday, what you'll find is that we've commenced the 25th of September, which is Monday. It's our intention to open all 10 sites from 10 to 4, so that's basically 6 days a week. The only difference there would be hill time, which would normally have closed on a Tuesday. So that basically means the Saturday operation will start on the 3rd of October, which I'm sure all members are glad to hear. I will say that there has been some difficulty in just trying to ensure a robust service there. So you may find that there may be problems maybe just with within hours of 10, maybe having to open at 11, or maybe having to maybe put in lunch breaks. That's really going to ensure that we meet the risk assessments with COVID-19 and we'll have the right manning levels. So as I say, hopefully it'll be a good news story on it. And again, as I say, any changes we would have, we will inform the members and the chairman. So again, just for the local report.
Okay, thank you, Joe.
Thank you,
I see Councillor Andrews is in there with proposal. Councillor Andrews, we're taking items 11 to 17 together because they're all for noting. Are you happy?
Yes, I should have waited there. I just wanted to make a comment in relation to the Saturday opening. As councillors, many of us have been lobbied by constituents about opening hours at present and the lack of Saturday opening. But I do welcome the paper and the news in it that we will be heading to Saturday opening and to more hours and the recycling centres, and I'd like to thank the officers and also to the staff at Manus, the recycling centres, because they've been under a lot of pressure since the facilities opened, and as normal they're doing an excellent job. So at least it's good to see things expanding in the right road. So thanks to all concerned.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Andrews. We have a couple of questions in there. Councillor Stokes, you're in there first.
Yeah, I'm so tight, throw my thunder, Chair, just to share the feedback. I'm sure all the councillors, including yourself, Chair, are getting it. People are anxious to see the Saturday reopening, particularly, I know a lot of people work from home, but a lot of people who aren't can't get to them if they're working on Monday to Friday in 9 to 5. So I'm glad to see that, and I thank Joe for that. Just also, let me throw yourself, Chair, to Joe, do you envisage any possibility that we, you know, given recent announcements and the fact it looks as if we're about to enter the second wave, if we haven't already, that we would have to close, are there any circumstances that we would have to close the recycling centres down again? Sure, thank you.
The answer to that one, Chair, is really, it depends. If the government closes down, then we'll have to close down. But I would like to think that we'll do our best to keep the sites open. Now, again, I would assume that if there was a problem in a particular area in the district, we may have to review it. We do review things on a daily basis, and we may find that we'd have to close maybe one or two sites. But again, that would be based on the information that there may be a difficulty in that area, or maybe from a resource point of view. But our intention is to do our best to keep the sites open, and especially for the Saturday, because, again, that helps to relieve the pressure during the week as well.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Roland, do you want to come in on that?
Yes, Chair. It's a very good question from Councillor Stokes. There was real problems when COVID hit the last time, and the unclear guidance that all councils received in respect to what could open, what could close. I think there's a general understanding amongst councils now that we would try and keep our household recycling centres open. But this would be down to resources again, though. Depends what happened with COVID. But I think this time there shouldn't be a decision to close them, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Roland. With another question in there from Councillor Casey.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. It seems Terry, without his glasses, has confused his P's and his Q's. He has a P in for proposing, and then he asked the question. Get those glasses on you, Terry. But anyway, Joe, you're bringing some good news tonight. That's
I will
very
be,
encouraging. Very encouraging about the recycling centres. I know my URI colleague, Councillor Valerie Hart, had made that suggestion that they should be fast-tracked, and it may well cure the illegal dumping, because, as everybody knows, people on their day off Saturday hope to get their stuff, anything they're intending to dump, to the recycling centre, but when they find it closed, they just... I'm not accusing everybody of doing it. Some might see an opportunity just to leave it somewhere rather than take it back home again. So that's good news, Joe, and I'm glad to hear it. And Roland has compounded the good news to say that it's unlikely they'll be closing again. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. And Councillor Flair?
Just to agree, it's good to see Saturday opening coming forward. It's a bit loose, the term, a matter of weeks. I could have 52 weeks, Joe. If you could maybe have some sort of date, Joe.
Is it sorry for the Saturday opening? Through the chair.
Yes, Saturday opening.
Yes, as I was saying there, that basically starting Monday, we're going to have the 10 sites open from 10 to 4. You may find some of them that close for lunch, etc. But that what that really means, Saturday the 3rd of October, we will be open on a Saturday. It will be my intention to keep it open, and that's from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for all 10 sites. Again, as I say, we might run into some operational issues, but I don't see us totally closing the sites again. So for me, hopefully, fingers crossed that things go to plan. Saturday's now back on.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. I very much welcome the opening of the recycling centres on a Saturday as well. We move on to item 13. It's a letter from NIEA regarding the Landfill Allowance Scheme, Regulations 2004, 15th Scheme Year 2019-20, Draft Reconciliations. I think Roland is going to come in on this.
Yes, Chair. This is a letter that we receive annually from NIEA. It just sets out how councils have performed, particularly the ART councils, in relation to their landfill allowance. And as we can see, the ARC area and our own council are well within our allocation of allowance, Chair, so it's really for knowing.
Okay, thank you. We move on to item 14, which is correspondence received from DERA regarding circular economy package policy statement. Again, Roland.
Yes, Chair. Again, information from DERA. They are really making minor changes to the circular economy package and the policy statement. And what they have said within this, that the main changes would be consulted through their future recycling document, which we considered earlier. So this is just really to link the two, Chair.
Okay, thank you for that. Item 15, which is ARC 21 Joint Committee Members Monthly Bulletin of the 27th of August 2020. Again, that's you, Roland.
Chair, our normal bulletin, unless any members have any issues they wish to raise, just for noting.
Okay. And item 16 is similar. It's the Joint Committee Minutes held on Thursday, the 30th of July 2020. If there's no questions, we'll move on to item 17, which is an R21 consultation response plastic packaging text. We have no issues. Are you looking to come in on that one, Roland?
Not unless you need me.
No, I think we're okay. Okay. Item 18 is the historic action sheet. We'll just take it page by page just for clarity. So page 1. Page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8, page 9, page 10, and page 11. Have we any issues arising from that? No? Okay, thank you. So, Item 19 is deemed to be exempt under paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act 2014. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information, and the public may by resolution be excluded during these items of business. Can I get a proposer and a seconder to go into closed session, please?
Sorry.
Thank you. Councillor Andrews proposed and Councillor Owen has seconded. Sir, can you just let me know when the press have left the meeting?
Yeah, sorry, Chair. I was just wondering if you wanted a proposer and seconder for all the noting items.
Oh, sorry. Yes, apologies. For items 11 to 17, I think Councillor Andrews proposed. Could I get a seconder for that, please? Councillor Owen. Thank you. So are we good to go on the... So, I'll just update you on item 19. So on the proposal of Councillor Stokes, seconded by Councillor McKevitt, it was agreed to note the content of the report and associated business case and to accept the conclusion of the business case to proceed to tender to procure a replacement digger, dumper and associated plant. Okay, that's us for tonight. I just before you go, I think Councillor Owen wants to come in there with something. I deleted it before I read it all. So Councillor Owen, have you something to say there first before we go?
Yeah, I'll not take it personally, you know. No, I was just wondering, I'm not sure, is this actually going to be Roland's last meeting?
No.
No, it's not. No, that's okay. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.